Welcome along to the programme. I'm Justin Brierley, the host of Unbelievable. And the guest I'm speaking to today is Dr. Hugh Ross of Reasons to Believe. Welcome along, Hugh.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. And it's just a good chance to share a little bit of your background, your faith journey on today's show. So take us back to the beginning, Hugh. You're a scientist now.
Right.
You're a Christian now.
Right.
But you weren't when you were growing up, were you?
Oh, not at all. I was born, raised, and educated in Canada. My parents were moral, but we only attended church a very few times. But I got into astronomy when I was seven, trying to figure out why the stars are hot. And from the age of eight onwards, I knew astrophysics would be my future career. Would study a particular discipline every year in some depth. Age 16, I looked at cosmology, the origin structure of the universe. And that's when I realized the evidence was heavily favoring Big Bang cosmology. And with Big Bang cosmology, the universe has a beginning. Therefore, there must be a beginner. So from the age of 16 onwards, I did not doubt the existence of God. But I was skeptical this God that created this vast universe would communicate to us beings on a small speck we call planet Earth. But for the sake of intellectual honesty, I actually went through the holy books of the religions of the world and recognize that of all the different holy books, there was only one that was accurately and consistently predicting future science and future history. And so at age 19, I signed my name in the back of a Gideon Bible, committing my life to Christ. And 8 years later, I met Christians when I arrived on the Caltech campus.
This story is just so interesting because nowadays, most people get the impression that if you start to look at science, you're more likely to be drawn away from any idea that God exists. But for you, quite the opposite. When you started to look at the science, you came from a place of, I guess, agnosticism to actually believing just on the basis of the scientific evidence that there must have been a creator.
Well, when you look at Big Bang cosmology, see, I was studying this at the very time when scientists here in Britain were developing the first of the space-time theorems, which states that the entire universe is traceable back to an actual beginning of space and time with a causal agent beyond space and time that brings this universe into existence. As I looked at the Eastern religions, they talked about space and time being eternal, not created. And what I saw in Christianity was a story that was different and consistent with the latest discoveries in astrophysics.
And so when you picked up the Bible and started looking through it for yourself, what kind of was the process by which you started to think, well, does that fit with what I know of science?
Well, what surprised me, it was the only holy book that actually spoke of an actual space-time beginning when the universe was created. It's also the only holy book that talked about the universe continuously expanding. And I knew enough about the history of astronomy to realize that was not recorded anywhere else outside of the Bible until the 20th century. For over 2,000 years, the Bible stood alone in stating, we live in a continuously expanding universe, a universe with constant laws of physics, and where one of those laws is a pervasive law of decay, which means we must be living in a universe that progressively gets colder and colder as it gets older and older.
It's really interesting you say this, because most people, I guess, who pick up the Bible don't see those kinds of details in it. Obviously, with your scientist eye on, what led you to the conclusion that some of these discoveries of modern science are in some sense predicted within the pages of Scripture?
Well, it's not that the Bible just says it once. I mean, there's actually 11 different passages which talk about God stretching out the heavens. Mm. And it puts it in a variety of different Hebrew verb forms, which means the Bible literally, not figuratively, is speaking about God continuously expanding the universe from the cosmic creation event. You know, that's the heart of Big Bang cosmology. So the fact that the Bible predicted Big Bang cosmology in all of its fundamental details thousands of years before any astronomer even dreamed of the concept was one piece of evidence that told me this book has predictive power. And I spent 2 years going through the Bible trying to find some place where it got it wrong on predicting future scientific discoveries. It never did. It was always right. And it's noticed that the same predictive power with respect to human history, right, predicting future historical events. And I realized that was only possible if this book was inspired by the one that actually created the universe and knows the future. And so that was one of many pieces of evidence that persuaded me.
It's extraordinary stuff. I mean, the first thing that leaps to my mind, though, is that most people, when they think of science in this country, do think that somehow it's linked inevitably to atheism. You know, our most famous expert, unfortunately, on this front is Richard Dawkins. And he very much sort of tends to focus, whenever he does engage with Christians, on a sort of young earth creationist view of creation, which he quickly points out is totally at odds with science. They believe that the world is only some 6,000 years old and don't believe in Big Bang cosmology and all the rest of it. So has he got a point? I mean, a lot of people do read the Bible that way. What's your response to that?
Well, I never even knew of a young earth interpretation of the Bible until I arrived in California. I mean, I never dreamed when I read through the Bible that anyone could possibly read it from a young earth perspective. But that was probably because, as a scientist, I was looking for consistency throughout the entire Bible. I understand how some people can take a young earth interpretation of a couple of isolated passages in the Bible, but when you read through all the biblical creation texts, it's self-contradictory from a young earth perspective. But if you take the idea that these days of creation are six consecutive long periods of time, which is one of the literal definitions for the Hebrew word yom, you're not only reading the entire Bible literally, you're reading it literally and consistently.
And so you do believe then that the creation act, as it were, took place over millennia in that
right sense.
And so how do you go to the six-day creation that we see in Genesis, Genesis chapter 1? What's happening there for you? What is being expressed, if not sort of six literal 24-hour day periods?
I read the Genesis for the first time at age 17, and I noticed right away there's an evening and a morning for the first 6 days, but not the seventh day. That's the day when God rests from his work of creation activity. And when I read that, it answered for me a problem that had bothered me since age 9, the fossil record enigma. How we see all this evidence for speciation events before humanity and virtually none afterwards. And when I read Genesis, this is finally the answer. For 6 days God creates. On the seventh day, he ceases from that work of creation. I also noticed that the text talked about the human male and the human female being created by God on day 6. But in chapter 2, there's a considerable passage of time between God creating Adam and God creating Eve. Even makes the point that Adam was lonely before Eve showed up. So I said the sixth day has got to be a significant period of time, as well as the seventh. And I noticed, too, that all the events mentioned in the 6 days were in the correct chronological sequence with respect to the record of nature.
I see. So rather than seeing that this is somehow 24-hour blocks in which everything was created, this kind of refers to scientific sort of epochs, if you like, in the created order. And that's where you sort of how you interpret the
Genesis.
Well, I mean, record.
Even in the English language, we talk about the day of the dinosaurs. Mm. So I mean, our own word "day" can be used for a long period of time. And when I looked into Hebrew, I discovered that almost every Hebrew noun has multiple literal definitions. So you must look at the context to see which of the five definitions of earth are referred to, for example, in Genesis 1, or the three different definitions of heaven. And likewise, the word for day in Hebrew has four different literal definitions, three of which show up in Genesis 1. Now, I think what helped me is right away when I looked at the Genesis 1, I saw that it followed the scientific method. And what really impressed me about the Bible, when I compared it with the other holy books, it was the only one that commanded objective testing. Everything must be tested. Hold fast to that which is good, that Paul says in Thessalonians. And actually, you see how the Bible not only tells you to put everything to test, shows you how to do it. So when I run into the Richard Dawkins of the world and say, are you aware that the scientific method comes from the pages of the Bible? There's no accident that
I can imagine how he responds to that. But
well, I mean, it's not an accident.
No.
The scientific revolution came out of the Reformation.
Absolutely.
So
you now run Reasons to Believe, and that's been going for a couple of decades now.
Right.
Where you're seeking to put science and faith together, show the harmony between the science, the nature, the record
right.
of nature, and the record of Scripture. Where does Jesus fit into all this? The person of Jesus obviously is the central defining aspect of the Christian faith. did Jesus sort of, as it were, look to the evidence of nature when he was presenting his followers and those around him with the vision of God that
well,
he presented?
Let me put it this way. Often people think of apologetics as arguing for the existence of God. I look at the record of nature as being much more potent than that. It's not only able to demonstrate that there's a God behind the universe, it's able to show you which kind of God is behind the universe. And that's where we pull Jesus Christ in. We say, this isn't just a God that transcends space and time. This is a God that's personal. This is a God that's many, many orders of magnitude more intelligent, more knowledgeable, more creative, more powerful, and particularly loving. You look at Psalm 104, it makes the point that God packed the earth with as much life as possible, as diverse as possible, for as long as possible, in order that we humans could be enriched with a huge treasure chest of biodeposits. That screams love and providence. And this is the God of the Bible, not the God of Islam, not the God of Hinduism or Buddhism. So our whole point of Reasons to Believe is we can not only demonstrate the existence of God, we can identify the identity of the cosmic creator, and it is the person of Jesus Christ. And then we ask the question, why these physics? I mean, that's something that grabbed me when I was a youth. Why gravity? Why electromagnetism? Why the strong and weak nuclear force? Why the four large space dimensions? And our research shows that all of this is necessary for the creator of the universe to eliminate evil and suffering quickly and efficiently and deliver us from this creation to a brand new creation. And so that, again, kind of just ties right into the gospel, and also realizing the physics of this universe provides the best possible theater for the creator of the universe to enter our realm, demonstrate an example of humility for all of us, but also take upon himself the redemptive price for the sins of every human being. The physics is perfect for the creator of the universe to do that.
It's mind-boggling stuff, but I'm so glad we have you, Hugh, to help us to understand and to put these things together. It's been great talking to you, Hugh, and if you would like to find out more about the Ministry of Reasons to Believe, I do encourage you both to visit Hugh's website, the Ministry of Reasons to Believe, follow the links for that, but also do go to the Unbelievable website, where we've a special section now of the website dedicated to finding out more and linking through to resources from Reasons to Believe. For the moment, thank you very much, Hugh, for joining me today.
My pleasure.